Daniels, A.G. White, W.C. Palmer. Wallsend, Newcastle, New South Wales, Australia. September 15, 1899. Dear Brethren Daniels, White, and Palmer. We arrived here at Wallsend at 10:30 a.m. For the first 8 miles, the roads were very rough, but the last part of the road was excellent. We did not feel very wearied. A good breeze sprang up, and we were quite refreshed. We drove slowly, because much of the way seemed to be uphill. Will it be so when we return? I am glad we came this way, for now we know the road. When we reached the suburb of Wallsend, we did not know the way to the mission, so we let the horse take his own course. He looked at every turn in the road, and finally brought us up to the gate of the right house. Sister Wilson was home, and very glad to see us. Last night I received words of caution that the school catalogue went into many particulars. These might better be subtracted from it. Do not feel that everything concerning our school must be given to the public. Leave many things unsaid. Do not open before all, in the catalogue, everything which concerns the school. As the matter now stands, the impression is upon many minds that the diet question is being carried to extremes. When students combine physical and mental taxation, so largely as they do at this school, the objection to the third meal is to a great extent removed. Then no one needs to feel abused. Those who conscientiously eat only two meals need not change in this at all. But when we have to prepare the third meal for different ones among our ministers, and for the president of the General Conference, it does not seem consistent to limit the students to only two meals. The statement need not be made that the third meal is limited as regards material, but this meal should be simple. The fact that some teachers and students have the privilege of eating in their rooms is not creating a healthful influence. There must be harmonious action in the conducting of meals. If those who only eat two meals have the idea that they must eat enough at the second meal to answer for the third meal also, they will injure their digestive organs. Let the students have the third meal, prepared without vegetables, but with simple, wholesome food, such as fruit and bread. Then the controversy will be ended. Then the removal of the vexed question, which keeps the minds of some fathers and mothers in a condition of distressed sympathy for their children, although these children are gaining flesh all the time, will remove a serious objection to the school. I think that healthy, growing youth need a nourishing diet, especially when dispensing with meat, which has an immediate stimulating influence, to be followed by depression. Meat eating cannot be tolerated in the school. Tea or coffee should not be allowed. And if the students are allowed to have lunches in their rooms, unwholesome food will be eaten, which will be deleterious to health. Teachers in any line, if they have not had an experience in health reform, will not see the necessity of binding about their own customs and habits and walking in the light that the Lord has given them upon these matters. They will hanker after hurtful things, as did the children of Israel, and to their own hurt. By their example, they will make it very difficult for the managers of the school to make the right course seem important and essential to the students. When the teachers do very much as they please, eating in their rooms when they choose, this removes from the students the objection for them to do this. The time has come when it is to be understood that those who connect with the school as teachers should not let one word drop from their lips in the line of complaint or criticism, for this will be a leaven that will work to cause disaffection and disunion. This past term of school has been most trying and taxing. When those who are working as teachers show an absence of caution and discretion, and express themselves as dissatisfied before teachers or students, they show that they have not that wisdom which makes their influence safe in the school. Here are collected together all kinds of minds, with all phases of character, and unless the students have a wise example set them, they will obtain little good in the school. The Lord says to the teachers, "You need to be converted. Your hearts need to be purified, refined, elevated, before you are qualified to teach in the school, or as nurses and physicians. You must drink the blood of the Son of God. You must eat His flesh, which is His word. Self and selfishness has worked and is working in the experience, so that the whole is marred. If ever anyone needed the purifying, refining influence of the Spirit of God. It is the teachers in our school, that they may do the work which is of such consequence to the students. Human nature is ever struggling for expression. It is ever ready for contest. The soul who learns in the school of Christ must be first emptied of self, of pride, of love of supremacy. There is a sacred silence in the soul. Self dies. Christ lives, and His grace is imparted. Oh, what a work needs to be done! The highest place we can occupy is sitting as did Mary at the feet of Jesus, learning of Him. The music of His voice charms the soul. When teachers receive Christ into their hearts as an abiding guest, the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, will be theirs, to impart in words, in attitude, and in example. Christ is an instructor to whom it is well that we all take heed. He that hath sent me is with me, He declared. The Father hath not left me alone. John 8, verse 29. No storm of human or satanic wrath could disturb the calm of His perfect communion with God. He says to us, "Take my yoke upon you, and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls." Matthew 11, verse 29. It is the love of self that interposes between the soul and God. It is the absence of sanctification of mind, soul, and spirit to God that leads to criticism and complaint. But I will go no farther with this matter this evening, for there are other things that are urged upon my mind. I send this as a word of warning.